Our next speaker is, I'm going to introduce our next speaker with a story that happened to me personally. As you know, I take care of beverages. And the day after Pesach, I got a call from Pathmark. They want to do a Pesach run. So I said, you just missed it. So they said, no, we mean for the next year. So in other words, although we're used to Pesach 8 days a year, but the companies work with Pesach all year round. And the person at the OU who takes care of that in a very special manner is our next speaker, Harav Shmuel Singer Shlita.
Okay, I'm going to attempt to give you in a half hour just a summary of the basic topic of Pesach and touch on a few issues, and that's the best we can do in this time. We'll start out this way. The main issue, or the main product, which you make for Pesach, we all know, is matzah. Now, matzah divides, of course, into shmura matzah and into regular matzah. I mean, shmura mishas katsira, shmura mishas tchina, and so on. Now, the OU is obviously involved in supervising matzah. Most of the matzah the OU supervises is the standard, the regular, the ordinary, the matzah mishas tchina. There is also matzah mishas katsira, which the OU supervises, but in a more limited way, fewer, smaller quantity. Now, to start out this way, the main issue with wheat today is different than what you will read in the Shulchan Aruch, because the conditions have changed. It used to be that wheat which came to a mill didn't have any problem. And there's even the discussion about Kemach, Menashuk not having any problem, and so on and so forth. This is not true today. The reason it's not true today is because wheat is tempered. Tempered means that the wheat, when it comes into the mill from the farm, is usually, most of the time, sprayed with water. And it's sprayed with water because of two reasons. First of all, economics, because when they spray it with water, the wheat absorbs water and they can get more product out of it without having to pay the full price. And second of all, because it's easier to grind. Wheat is very hard, and when you water it down and you wet it down, it obviously becomes soft, and when it becomes softer, it's easier to grind. There's a small chalik of what's called hard wheat flour, which is made for certain specialty items, pretzels, things of this sort, require dry wheat. But all other wheat, all other flour, which comes from wheat, all other wheat is normally ground after being tempered. So since this is true, the hashgacha for a Pesach flour is much more difficult than it had been 100 years ago, or all the time of the past. Now, what we do when we do hashgacha at a mill is we shut off all the water. And that means you have to know the mill, and you have to know where the water comes in, and you have to be familiar with all the ins and outs, and we have people who do know that. And before we do a hashgacha at the mill, we shut off the water. We isolate the bins. The bins mean both the bins in which the wheat arrives and the bins in which the flour go out. We have to clean those bins. And then comes the ikker thing that needs to be done in a mill, and that is the screens and the sifters. Because when you grind wheat, it goes through, I'm not exaggerating, hundreds of screens and hundreds of sifters. And each one of these screens and sifters is pulled out and is cleaned and reassembled and so on and so forth. There are other parts of the whole machinery which have to be done because these little pieces of machinery have flour or wheat stuck in them. And therefore, in order to do it as a Pesach production, we have to disassemble the whole mill, reassemble the whole mill, and then we do the hashgacha with a mashgiach who is present. Now, the main matzah baking company in the United States is Manischewitz, and that's an OU company which makes all the OU matzah, whether Manischewitz, whether Horace Margaretten, whether Goodman, whatever it may be, and that's the system. They get their flour from certain mills. Each one of the mills they get their flour from is kosher and has a mashgiach present. Now, relevant to Rabbi Grossman, what Rabbi Grossman told you earlier, at the present time, today, Manischewitz is baking Pesach matzah. Okay? That started the day after Tisha B'Av. That's the way it generally starts. On Tzoei Tisha B'Av, they began baking, which means the week before Tisha B'Av was the week that everything was disassembled and replaced and koshered at the mills. So even though you may be thinking about Chodesh Elul, they are in the midst of baking matzah as we speak. Now, the other step that goes into the preparation of the mills, which I left out, I should have said it earlier, is the wheat which comes in from the farm. Now, the wheat which comes in from the farm, it comes in trucks, you know, like kernels, like seeds, right? And that's going to go into the mill. Now, we have to check those shipments, and we check for mitzmachos, we check for mevukos, which means we take handfuls of the wheat, we put it on a piece of white cloth, and we look through to see if there's mitzmachos or mevukos. We reject certain loads, we accept certain loads, and so on and so forth. There's a whole umness required to learn how to recognize a mevukos, mitzmachos, and that is one of the things the mashgiach does at the mills. Now, also, just for your information, each grinding of the matzah tachuna is obviously done l'shem matzah mitzvah, and that's another reason why the mashgiach is present. Now, if you're going to say this is not the matzah shmura, so why is it done l'shem matzah mitzvah? The answer is because the majority of Klal Yisrael, not necessarily religious Klal Yisrael, even though some of them, but the majority of Klal Yisrael buys regular matzah for the Seder and uses it. And therefore, we make it l'shem matzah mitzvah for them as well, which according to the majority of poskim, by the way, is absolutely kosher l'chatchila if it's mishas techila. The requirement mishas ketzira is only a minority position. It's a l'chumra, it's a l'chatchila, it's not meikar adin, and therefore, I'm not telling you not to use it, but I'm telling you, therefore, we have no problem in making the matzah mishas techina l'shem matzah mitzvah. We don't recommend using it if people ask us, but we know that they will use it, and therefore, it is made l'shem matzah mitzvah. Now, at Manischewitz itself, at the factory itself, a similar kashering takes place before the Pesach season. And as I said to you, the Pesach season is now. So the kashering, which took place, was going on in June and July in the Manischewitz factory. And the reason they have to kasher there is that Manischewitz bakes chametz as well as Pesach. From after Pesach, or maybe even from a month before Pesach, depending on the season, they start baking chametz matzah. Not only do they bake chametz matzah, they also bake chametz gomer, by which I mean tam tam crackers. And even the chametz matzah is at least a suffik chametz, because it's made not from flour with hashgacha, and you remember what we said about tempered wheat, and it's made without mashgichim, and it's made with nobody watching for 18-minute overruns. And therefore, since they bake chametz matzah and chametz cookies, crackers, whatever, we have to kasher the whole factory, which is the way it's done, that at the middle of June, the end of June, the factory is taken apart, all the machinery is taken apart, cleaned, pieces of machinery that have cracks, belts, and so on, are sent out for being refilled, rollers have to be recovered with Teflon again, because Teflon is used that it does not stick, and so on and so forth. After this is all done, and I left out one of the main koshering things which is done there, which is the bins, the receiving bins into which the flour goes, and the receiving and the outgoing bins in which the matzah meal goes out, all have to be cleaned, because during the chametz season it was accepting ordinary flour and sending out at least suffik chametz matzah meal, right? And cleaning these bins, by the way, is not cleaning a bin like you would think. It's cleaning a bin which is four stories high. So that this is major jobs requiring people to use ladders and all sorts of things of that nature, and it's a very long, prolonged kashering. Now then, having done all that, having kashered, and having the mills kashered, and having the factory kashered, then we have the mashgichim at the mills, which we had already as of last week, sending out trucks with the flour which was made l'shem matzah mitzvah mishas techina, and of course the truck is cleaned prior to being loaded. The Mashgiach climbs in and checks that it is clean, and more important than that is clean, that it's dry, because very often it's not dry. And if it's not dry, then you're going to have chametz with the flour. So after he checks the truck, and he then fills it with the flour, he seals it with a seal, and then it goes to the matzah bakery, where it is accepted by the Mashgiach at the matzah bakery. The seal is opened, the flour is unloaded, the truck is cleaned out, and it's sent back again, you know, to be filled off, to be filled again with the new flour. Now, in the...
Is it resealed on the way back?
I believe yes. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, they would have to worry about cleaning it again, so to save the time, it is. During the operation, and like I told you, the operation is already now, there are mashgichim on the mixing floor, there are mashgichim on the baking floor, and with air hoses to blow off extra little pieces of dough and dirt so it doesn't get into the lines. And then also there is a mashgiach at the end of the oven who looks for kfula and afucha, which is a big issue in matzah. And kfula and afucha means when the matzah either is doubled over, so you have a piece on top of a piece, it didn't go straight like a straight line, and or it's nefucha, which means it bubbled up and it blew up. In those cases we reject it, and the system is built very automated, of course. It's built in a very automated way whereby when it comes out of the oven, depending on what switch you push, it will either go down to the next floor to be boxed as matzah, or it will go down to the crusher to be crushed as matzah meal, or when it's a reject, it will go down the third way to a bin, which is animal feed, which is then sold out by the company to animal food companies. And a lot of matzah goes into animal feed, but you know that's budgeted into the factory, you know, certain rejects, that it's sold out as rejects. Everybody in business has rejects. One other point to mention is that people ask this, the matzah we are makbid when it goes into the oven, the machine matzah, is cut prior to entering the oven. In other words, it's a sheet, right, a sheet of matzah, and before going to the oven, it's cut, the knife cuts it into pieces.
It's a sheet of dough, right?
Sheet of dough, correct. And the sheet of dough is cut before entering the oven. The reason it's cut before entering the oven is, number one, because there is a chashash. Whether this would really make it usher or not is not clear, but anyway, but there's a chashash that if one piece of the dough gets hot, maybe the other piece of the dough also gets hot. In other words, the piece of the dough entering the oven is already getting hot, and the piece of the dough in the back is not getting hot, and maybe it'll be chimas through that. Rabbi Belsky doesn't really think so, but anyway, nevertheless, it is cut that way. It also has the additional benefit which people ask about, and that is, therefore, all matzah, even the chametz matzah, is lechem mishnah, because all matzah is lechem shalem. It's all separate before being baked. It's not cut after being baked. It's a separate piece of dough, baked as a separate lechem.
How would they cut matzah? How much space is there? Is it mamash an inch you're talking about?
I can't tell you exactly. I mean, I don't know if it's an inch, but it's a piece. It's a distinct square of dough. It's not microscopically separate. I mean, it's distinct. Okay, now the other thing which we have tested and many times is that there should be no heat in front of the oven. And that's not an easy thing to establish, you know. Because if you have an oven, and this is not an oven like you may have seen in a hand matzah bakery. This is an oven, this is a tunnel oven, which is like, I don't know, 50 feet, 60 feet, 70 feet long, something like that. And which is also, by the way, 1,000 plus degrees. So, therefore, the fear would be that at the oven mouth, there is hot air coming out, right? There could be. And if there was hot air coming out, we were going to have a question of chimutz. Therefore, this oven has been built in a special way whereby, and I cannot tell you why, I can just tell you the way it is. It's been built in such a way whereby there is no heat coming out of the mouth of the oven. This was, you know, something which the engineers sat and discussed and worked on. But nevertheless, it was done.
Even an inch before the oven?
Yeah, correct. It's a very strange thing. You can put your hand, and I have done it many, many, many times. You can put your hand in front of the oven, you won't feel hot. Now, the two other issues to mention, one is Hafrashas Challah. We use a Hafrashas Challah system in Manischewitz, which is Rabbi Belsky's system, which is that there is tevel matzah baked once in the course of the year, which, by the way, a lot of OU companies use when they're Jewish-owned OU bakery companies. And the tevel matzah is baked once a year, and there's a certain amount of it, 5 pounds, based on a certain calculation he made, which is left in the mixing room throughout the year. And each day, the mashgiach says a certain formula whereby he says that 1 gram of matzah should become challah on behalf of the lisha of today.
And so
that basis,
he
doesn't take off anything. He says that 1 gram of matzah in the tevel boxes should become challah on behalf of the dough that is being baked here in this mixing room today.
And he says the same thing again. Bakery also?
Hmm?
This be done
it is
bakery?
Done. It is done in all OU industrial bakeries that are Jewish owned. This isn't the chiddush of Manischewitz. This is the only chiddush about Manischewitz is this: Manischewitz provides the tevel matzah for everybody, because you have to have a bakery which is Jewish owned, which is going to bake tevel matzah, which is going to be usable, because you have to use matzah, because if you don't use matzah, it'll spoil. So you have to use something which will last a year, right? Mishana l'shana, and which is tevel, which is baked by a Jewish bakery. So actually, there's an appointment to do this next week. I have an appointment to go there and to bake tevel matzah. We bake 500 pounds of tevel matzah or something, and then it's kept and distributed to all the various Jewish-owned bakeries. So rather than being mafresh from a piece of dough, which is too complicated in an automated bakery, it's not possible, it's not shaykh to do it. I mean, maybe a commercial bakery, maybe a retail bakery, yes, it's not possible at all, an industrial bakery. So if it's a Jewish-owned bakery, I mean, there aren't that many Jewish-owned bakeries, but if it's a Jewish-owned industrial bakery, that's the system that's used. The emes is you don't even have to say it every day, because the way he wrote the nusach, it's from the time this is said until the next time it's said. It should be hafrasha. It's written that way, so in case the bashkiach forgets to say it, there's a safety cushion in the wording. What? Which ones?
Let's say you use matzah.
Yeah.
Send out.
Yeah. But
you can make the matzah later.
The hafrasha was made, b'shasa was mixed.
Every time you mix it, it's salmon.
Yeah, right, sure. Okay, now the other thing to mention is I said that there was shmura matzah made as well. Now shmura matzah is made, first of all, the machine factory which makes regular matzah makes shmura matzah. And the only difference is, actually two differences. The first difference is that the flour which comes in is not the regular flour mishas techina, right? The flour is special flour mishas hashgacha mishas katsira. Other than that, it's baked in the same machine system. And the only other thing that's done is that the button which starts the system is pushed l'shem matzah mitzvah. Now the truth is the button is always pushed l'shem matzah mitzvah, because as I told you, all matzah is made l'shem matzah mitzvah. The only difference is that since this is the shmura baking, and since a couple of important rabbanim show up for it, they get the covet of pushing the button and saying l'shem matzah mitzvah rather than the worker, the Shomer Shabbos Mashgiach, who does it. But I mean, other than that, it's really the same system and the same of baking the machine shmur.
Does it have to be washed once every 18 minutes?
No. Well, it doesn't stop every 18 minutes.
So
it keeps on going.
It cleans out. It
does and it doesn't. In other words, they clean out the kettles every 18 minutes, that is correct, but it doesn't, the current is still running. It doesn't, it's time to go to start again.
Conveyor belt. What about the conveyor belt where the dough is put on? It's not cleaned every 18 minutes?
No. The conveyor belt where the dough goes on is not cleaned. The thing which is cleaned 18 minutes is the mixing floor. The baking floor is not cleaned every 18 minutes, and that is based on both Rabbi Belsky and Rabbi Schechter saying that it's a continuous ASIC on the belt, and since it's a continuous ASIC on the belt, there's no time for it to be machmitz, and therefore we don't clean it. We only clean it once a day when they shut down.
Even the matzahs are still in 18 minutes,
right? Excuse me?
There
are no 18-minute matzahs.
Oh, he doesn't have 18-minute
No.
What's the ASIC on the belt?
That moves.
It
moves and it shakes. It vibrates.
So only the bins are clean.
Not the bins, the mixing kettles. Okay. Now, since there are two lines of kettles, so one is being cleaned, the other one is still being mixing, so there's always continuous dough flowing, and it's all timed out. Okay. Now we go over to other Pesach issues. Let me just focus on a few things. Now, obviously, we know that not only is chametz forbidden, but also kidneys is forbidden. Now, when we say kidneys is forbidden, the OU does not use not only kidneys, it doesn't use anything which is jotzim in our kidneys, which means we don't use shemen kidneys, we don't use derivatives of kidneys, we don't use any of that in Pesach products. With the following exception, which is a big exception, and that is something which is called kidney shenishtana. Kidney shenishtana is something which you can only do with modern science, which is that you can take corn syrup, that's usually the case, doesn't have to be that, but that's the usual case. You can take corn syrup, which is yotzim in our kidneys, and you can react it with certain enzymes and so on and so forth, and go through a lot of different chemical changes, and then you come out with something totally different. Maybe citric acid, maybe MSG, all sorts of different chemicals. And that is considered to be kidney shenishtana. And we have the position, not only we, by the way, but most hashgachas agree on this, the OK does it, the KAJ does it, most hashgachas do it, that kidney shenishtana is mutter l'chadchila, and it's based on the Prima Gadim and so on, and that's the most common case where this comes up, and you may have heard this, is aspartame. Aspartame is the artificial sweetener, which is used in Coca-Cola and used in different sodas, used all over the place, and aspartame is a kidney shenishtana thing, which means that if you go back four generations from the aspartame, you'll find that originally, after, before, many, many, many different chemical changes, there was a base of corn syrup in it. And we have no problem saying that it's l'chadchila kosher. Now, most Pesach products, I say in general, almost all Pesach products are made with Hashgacha Tmidis. And that's the basic difference between regular OU Hashgacha and Pesach Hashgacha. Now, I say most because there are a few exceptions, but I would say 90%, maybe more, is always made with Hashgacha Tmidis. And that also means that Pesach products, unless you know different, you can take it pretty clear, Pesach products are all Bishul Yisrael. And the reason why regular OU products are not Bishul Yisrael is because the Mashgiach is not there. So there's a certain terim, there are a certain terim, whatever it is. But the Pesach product, not necessarily because it needs Bishul Yisrael, but because the Mashgiach is there in any case, and because he's there as Hashgacha Tmidis, is always Bishul Yisrael because of him being present. Okay.
So you need to turn on the fire also.
Yeah, he turns it on. He's there. They don't start without him. That's the whole point. No. It's part of his job. He's there anyway. I mean, they can't start without. Can't start till he's there. So once he's there, he knows he turns on the machine. Okay. Now we don't use chametz in any Pesach product or kidneys in any Pesach product, even if it's bottled. In other words, even though we would say that it's bottled anyway, and chametz is bottled of Ne'ah Pesach, this which people tell you that chametz is mashu is not relevant because the only time chametz is mashu is b'socha Pesach, and there is absolutely no Pesach product ever made b'socha Pesach. So every Pesach product is always made before Pesach, and every Pesach product which has chametz in it is always bottled anyway. Chametz is no worse than any other Yisrael before Pesach. It's better because chametz is hetera before Pesach. So despite what people think, chametz is not so more chomer than anything else. But despite having said that, we don't give an OU Pesach hechsher to something having chametz, even though al pi did, it's bachus mishishim and it is bottled in the product. Yeah. Okay. No, I don't know. Somebody asked me something. Yeah. No, not if it's bottle. If it's lach balach, it's not chozer b'nir. It's only chozer b'nir if it's yavesh, if there's two separate pieces. But the normal product which has chametz in it has become gush echad. The ingredient has combined with all the other ingredients and become one thing, and it's not nikkur, and therefore it's not chozer b'nir. Chozer b'nir is only when it's nikkur. Okay, now, many innocent foods which you would not think are problems are Pesach problems because of one of two things. Either because of equipment, meaning the food itself might have no chametz component, no kidneys component, but the equipment is used for chametz products. And even if that piece of equipment is not used for chametz products, other equipment in the factory is used for chametz products, and then there's recirculating steam and so on, and therefore that's one major problem. And the other major problem is enzymes. All sorts of seemingly innocent foods which have no obvious chametz component or even no obvious kidneys component have enzymes which are used to chemically change them from A to B, right? And those enzymes are very often chametz. Enzymes are, most of the time, there are exceptions, but enzymes are most of the time grown on chametz because microbes are the ones which create the enzymes, and the best medium for microbes is a grain-based medium. Therefore, when normal chemical companies make enzymes, they normally grow the enzymes on a grain-based base. And once that happens, then we have to get involved in the question that The microbe is growing on grain, so therefore hayotzei min hachametz is chametz, and therefore the enzyme coming out is chametz. And then the enzyme, of course, makes a chemical change. So maybe even though the enzyme is put in very microscopically, first of all, it's probably a davar hamamid. And even if it's not a davar hamamid, we don't give a pesach hechsher to something which has a chametz component, even if it's bottled. So the end result is that we require pesach enzymes for pesach productions, and pesach enzymes are quite expensive. And they have to be made specially, usually. And that is why any number of, items which are made for Pesach are so much more expensive, partly because the companies want to make money, but partly because the it costs more. It really actually does cost more. Okay. Now, number of other issues to mention. First of all, milk. Now, the issue with milk, people ask, what is the issue with milk? And, of course, the issue with milk is twofold. First of all, milk by government law, United States government law, probably other governments too, requires vitamins. You can't sell milk without eating vitamins. And vitamins include vitamin A and vitamin D, and one or both are usually made from a chametz basis. So it's again the same story. It's made originally for chametz beis. Of course, it's bottle, but we it's put for Pesach. It's lach b'lach. It is bottle. There's no question. It's bottle. It's not chozer minir. But having said all that, we don't l'chatchila give a hechsher to it. So when we give a hechsher, I mean, we tell people that maker adin, you can buy it before Pesach and use it because it's kvar bottle. But in order to put an OU Pesach hechsher on milk, and we do OU Pesach milk in a very big way, we require that the vitamins that are put in are Pesach vitamins, which have to be made specially similar to the enzymes. The second issue, which has to do with milk, is an issue not before Pesach, but on Pesach. And that's similar with what I mentioned before. Chametz before Pesach is a teira, chametz after Pesach, or in Pesach, is obviously isura. So the problem becomes from the cows, which eat chametz grain. Because the main food cows eat is grain. Grain and hay and grass, but also grain. And the grain which the cows eat is at least a suffix chametz. Maybe a vadei chametz. So that would mean that the cows which eat chametz, b'shas isur, are producing milk, which is usur. Now, as a result of that, we do not give Pesach Hashgacha to milk which is made on Pesach. All OU milk Pesach Hashgacha ends with Erev Pesach. And we tell this to the companies that we cannot supervise milk, OUP, after Siman Isur Chomesh. Last time the Hashgacha can come is the morning of Erev Pesach, and everything after that cannot be labeled OUP any longer. The cows have eaten chametz, b'shas isur. So this is a big discussion in all the Achronim and so on. If an animal eats chametz, b'shas isur, and the milk is made from the chametz, is the milk usur? The milk is a byproduct of chametz. The cow eats the chametz, and the milk is produced by the cow from the chametz, from the chametz feed.
So my grandfather was a dairy farmer, and I was there many hundred times. There's never any wheat anywhere. It's hay in the summer, hay in the winter. Grass, asked him about this.
I don't know. And?
Said, no, who gives wheat to cows in America?
It might not be wheat, but it certainly might be oats, and it might be barley, and it might be malt. I don't know. I can't answer you, but I know that it happens, okay? I mean, you were quoting one case where it didn't happen. Other cases, it does happen. What kind of, one doesn't exclude the other. In his place, it wasn't a problem, but the places, it was a problem. Okay?
The grain that they give them, it's wet.
First of all, it might very well be, and second of all, you can't trace it. How do you know it wasn't before it came there? First of all, we can't trace the wheat which came there, right? So, I mean, it came, it was transported in the rain, it was transported in the snow, it was stood near water, that's number one. And that, there's also discussion in Shulchan Aruch about the fact that the animal puts its saliva in the grain, and it's machmes while he eats it. Or I should say while she eats it, because while the cow eats it, the saliva of the cow is very often machmits the grain. Okay.
Now,
we don't check during Pesach, as far as I know. No, it is a similar concern.
The milk that comes from right after Pesach.
After Pesach, it becomes
the cow ate yesterday.
I know, but the cow. I know, but why is that usur for you? It's usur for you to eat it. B'shas isur chametz. You can eat chametz after Pesach. The farmer is not a guy.
It's a Jewish company.
Who told you it's a Jewish company? There aren't any Jewish milk companies except for the Chol of Israel companies. The milk companies are national companies. I mean, I don't. Okay. Now, having said that, we will make a. I'm going to conclude with this point, which you actually mentioned, and that's actually two points. First one is chametz shavu for Pesach. Chametz shavu la Pesach is a concern only when you're dealing with Jewish companies. Now, thank God, we don't live in a Jewish country, And despite what people may think, because they live in Jewish neighborhoods, the great majority of this country is not Jewish. And I mean 98 or 99%. So, there is, first of all, a bona fide suffix on anything that it's a guy. And, not a suffix, a rov shein kamo. Number two, as a point of fact, the majority of companies are not Jewish owned. So having the majority of companies are now even publicly owned, it's very rare. There are some, but it's a small minority. Now, that small minority of Jewish companies are dealt with by the OU in the following way. There's a list made up of them, and my associate, Rabbi Schreier, who's sitting here, actually is the one who deals with this directly. And every person in the OU who has certain companies contacts those companies before Pesach. And number one, there's a mechira done. Number two, there's an arrangement done whereby chametz gomer is not produced by Jewish-owned companies. I mean, things which have kithnias are yes produced, and things which have a suffix are yes produced, but the majority chametz gomer is not produced, and the company is sold when necessary,
and
we rejected companies on that basis, and we've terminated companies on that basis, and there are certain exceptional cases where there's a full shtar mechira done, whereby, and I had a case similar to this in one of my companies, whereby there's a Jew and a guy, and the guy is a part owner, and there's a shtar mechira which is made, and Rabbi Belsky has been involved in the shtar mechira, whereby the entire profits of Pesach go to the guy, and the Jew is mistalik from the business, but it's not a pro forma. He's really mistalik from the business, and we police the fact that he's out of the business. And on that basis, we're able to continue the hashgacha there. Now, I'm just going to conclude with one other item. We can speak about many other things, and that's the issue of decaffeination of coffee. Okay, and people ask about decaffeination, and our position is regular coffee is usually not a problem. Flavored coffees could be a problem because of the flavor, but the icker thing I want to speak about for a minute is decaffeination. Now, when you want to decaffeinate coffee and when you decaffeinate tea, you have to remove the caffeine, and the way you remove the caffeine, different methods of removing the caffeine, but it basically involves putting something onto the coffee, onto the tea, which will absorb the caffeine, and then removing that agent from the coffee or from the tea. So one of the agents which is used to decaffeinate both coffee and tea is ethyl. Ethyl acetate. Ethyl acetate is ethyl alcohol, which is probably chametz, sapik chametz for sure, maybe even vade chametz in many cases, and on that basis, we can't give a hashgacha to decaffeinated coffee or tea. Now, there are other ways of decaffeinating. There's water decaffeination, there's methyl chloride decaffeination, there are methods of caffeination which are not chametz problems. Therefore, there are certain companies which restrict themselves, dafka, to non-ethyl acetate decaffeination, and there we have no problem giving a hefsher. For example, Lipton tea, if you will look on the regular box of the Lipton tea bag, they make a big thing out of the fact that it's water decaffeination only. They're not doing it because of Pesach, they're doing it for the health market. But anyway, since that is so, and since they police it because it's in their interest to do it, they have to do it because they're afraid of the health implications of ethyl acetate, therefore we don't have a problem with the decaffeinated Lipton tea bags. In coffee, it's much harder to give this kind of an assurance because it's business-driven, and the coffee companies will buy different shiploads of coffee beans, which are decaffeinated by different methods, and there's only one thing which will determine whether they buy a particular shipload, and that whichever one is cheaper on that day is the one they will buy. And therefore, if it's ethyl decaffeinated and the price is better, they'll buy that. And if the next week it's water decaffeinated and the price is better, they'll buy that. And they will not restrict themselves, and they can't restrict themselves. And since that's the case, most of the time, it's rare for us to be able to give a hechsher to decaffeinated coffee. Okay.
Well, unless we check.
But they can't. I mean, not willing to.
A few
little ones. Yeah, because they're smaller and they're able to do it. But otherwise, it's not able to.
Can we take two questions?
Yeah.
Two questions.
Well, we have Meshgichim there. No, it doesn't require it. I mean, we have Meshgichim, the factory in general, on a whatever basis, four times a year, whatever it is, because it's only tea. But through that, we know that they only buy water decaffeinated loads. Okay? Yes? I said 90%. 90 plus percent.
I tried calling me and finding out after Pesach about associated stores.
You mean who owns what?
Items.
This is a whole separate business question. I want to tell you something. It's extremely difficult to trace something like this. You know, I mean, it's extremely difficult to trace it. How do you know? I'll just give you one little illustration of why it's so difficult to trace it. You don't know who's Jewish. And the yesod which people use of names is irrelevant. 50% of the Kohens today are total bona fide Goyim because they have Goyish mothers and grandmothers. And 50% of the people, that's too much, but 5% of the people named Smith could easily be bona fide Jews because they have Jewish mothers. It's impossible to trace it.
Okay.